Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Stream your favorite shows on ESPN975.com.
It's really quite simple.
KFNC, Mont Belvieu, Houston, a Gal Media station. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack. Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back.
What up, H-Town? And let me be the last to wish you a happy new year and a happy 2017 as we welcome you into the show. Joel Blank, Barry Laminack, and Nick Shirara until 4 o'clock. And, gentlemen, no shortage of things to talk about, as we all know, and we'll keep it real, sports and some other things. First and foremost, hopefully, I'll just check in and say, hopefully y'all had a happy new year, but how was your New Year's? What did I miss over the weekend in the lives of Barry and Nick?
Well, I did have a happy new year. Happy new year to you too, Nick. Happy new year to you. I had a nice, relaxing New Year's. It is the annual washing of the pants.
Saw that?
Yeah. Yearly, I wash all my jeans. So you guys don't know about that, do you?
But then does it take you like a certain amount of time to get back in them? Because you know they do you dry yeah. them? Because they do shrink a little bit.
No, I hang them.
Okay, there you go.
That's why it takes like 3 days, because that's with my fat ass, I got a lot of jean material.
Huh? Aren't they really like crispy if you air dry them?
Yeah, well,
So what you have to do is you wash them, mm-hmm. and then you air dry them, and then you throw them in the dryer on cool for 5 to 10 minutes, knock that cardboard feel off of them,
okay.
and then you're good to go. Now, I will admit, right now, I feel like I'm wearing yoga pants because mm-hmm. these are some freshly cleaned blue jeans, but I'm dealing with it. But yeah, I learned that this past year over a year ago that you shouldn't wash your jeans very often. You should wash them like maybe once a year. Not like your khakis and stuff like that, but stuff made out of blue jean material does not need to be washed all the time. Once a year. That's from The Gap, and they're like experts, apparently. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah. What happens if you're a guy that likes to get out in the mud and do some things?
Wash your jeans.
There you go.
Yeah, but me, like, let's face it, my fat ass didn't get out and doing anything. I walk to my car, I park here, I walk to this chair, and I sit down, and then I reverse that, and then I'm back on the couch. There's really no reason for me to wash my jeans weekly. That's not a thing. So, yeah. So that's it, man. That's how I kick it off. That's how I kick off my new year, with the annual washing of the pants.
Okay. And then I mistakenly read one of your tweets the wrong way, and I thought because you always talk about you have a penchant to cry easily.
Yeah, yeah.
And the cats, which are a side story. But I thought you said that my wife said I'm overly sensitive, so I was like, did you cry? And then I went back and read it after you responded and said, no, evidently I laughed at the run, and I thought, oh, God, I misread that. Yeah. It was, my wife thinks I'm insensitive, and I went, oh, see,
I made a joke on Twitter that I don't want to say on air because I think it would be offensive.
Not you worried about offensiveness. Come on.
Yeah. You want me to say it? I'm going to get a letter. I'm telling you, I'm going to get a letter. I'm going to get...
Would this be your first letter?
Yeah.
Oh.
I might get reprimanded. I might get barred from the air for the week.
You probably should pad the brakes then.
Okay. Yeah, I figured you'd want me to...
I mean, say it, Barry.
I mean, yeah, say it, please. Say it twice. Record it. Make it a drop. No. Play it every time he comes back so he can suspend it again.
I have a heart. I am not as ruthless as you people seem to think.
But yeah, so I made this really insensitive tweet about Brock Osweiler's accuracy, and my wife called me insensitive. And then I laughed at her, and I think I proved her point. So, yeah, that's it, man.
Hey, and then you guys, just quickly, too, before we get to you, Nick, but you guys a little shocked by that Ronda Rousey fight the other night?
I am. I don't think Barry is.
Not a bit.
I don't think Barry is, but I am.
I picked Nunes. I picked Garbrandt.
Yeah, I picked against both of them, so yeah.
I expected those fights. Now, I will say this. I expected the Nunes fight to go that way. That's exactly how I thought it would go. That's why I picked Nunes. I think Ronda Rousey proved she can't handle a striker when she got knocked out by Holly Holm.
Right.
She hasn't fought since then. The ring rust showed. She didn't know what to do as soon as she got hit because she's a judoka. I mean, she practices judo. That's what she's good at. That's her ability. Most people come in as a striker or whatever. She does judo. And in judo, you have to be able to get your hands on the person in order to be effective. Judo is all about throws, which is all about leverage. She was unable to get her hands on Nunes because she was getting punched in the face the entire time. And when you're backing up, trying to grab at punches because you don't know what else to do because you're not a striker, that's what happens. And that's exactly what you saw. No head movement, no foot movement. She's grabbing at punches. Her hands are straight out. She's obviously not a striker, and she obviously can't handle a striker. And I'll say this, she probably should retire because she can't handle anybody on the ground either when it comes to jiu-jitsu. Yes, she can armbar because that's part of judo. There's some jiu-jitsu elements in judo, but not like black belts. I mean, I don't think she would be ready for a legit black belt in jiu-jitsu that could take her down and you know, submit her as easily as she could submit them. So,
but do you guys buy into this whole thing that she's had so much success her whole life with the Olympics and all the other things she's done that the first loss was like so devastating that it was so much harder for her to get over than most people would in any kind of fighting situation or any kind of competitive situation, and that she never really recovered from the first one, and then this one just basically, I mean, look at how long it took her to get back in the ring or the octagon.
A year. And maybe, yeah, mentally, she. I don't think she's the same mentally, obviously. I actually said before that I still think she can perform from a physical standpoint. I think mentally her mind just won't let her. I'm not ready to say that she's going to retire.
Don't know if she will or won't, but I think she should.
Yeah.
But did she get $3 million for this fight?
Yes, she did.
Yeah.
So if the money's still like that, I mean, Here's the thing, if you go in for eight more seconds.
The money won't be like that again. No one wants to see Ronda Rousey fight again. Not to that level. Like when the curtain is pulled back and you're exposed that mystique wears off. Like, she's no longer the world's most dangerous women's fighter.
No.
Like, she's been beat the last two times and it wasn't even close. She was knocked out and then she was knocked out on her feet. Like, she's been exposed she has a weakness, and it's people that can punch.
Yeah, and it could have been worse because, you know, the ref kind of stepped in and while she was kind of out on her feet. It could have been another one of those, you know, knockout losses that she suffered with, you know, with Holly Holm. It could have been a lot worse, but thankfully Herb Dean got in there and stopped it. I've always believed that you don't have to be the best striker to be the best fighter. You don't have to be the best striker to be a champion. George St. Pierre, he faced, you know, I would say at least two or three challengers where I felt like the challenger had superior striking, but he did what he had to do to nullify that. He had great footwork. He was able to take him down. His timing was impeccable. I just didn't see any of that. Well, you know,
so one-dimensional though. That's the thing. Like, George St. Pierre had a karate background, so he understood angles. He understood footwork. He understood how to position yourself against a striker to be able to get the takedown. Like, there's all that goes into it. Ronda Rousey knows judo. And judo's about, let me get my hands on you so I can get you on the ground and submit you. And that's all she knows. And she doesn't know striking. And dude, she didn't move her head even when she was getting hit. Like, it's like, it was...
She did just kind of sit there and take it like a punching bag.
It was atrocious. I mean, if you look at how she even holds her hands, you can tell she doesn't know a lot about striking, even at that level. And that's fine. There are one-dimensional fighters, but you won't be the cream of the crop if you're that one-dimensional like she is, in my opinion. Some people may disagree, but...
Nick, how was the weekend otherwise?
I had fun. I just did a little, you know, family outing for New Year's. Stayed in Sugar Land, went to the town square over there. Didn't really drink or anything, but had a great time. Enjoyed.
Yeah. He was telling me there's only, I saw it on TV and it's right by the house. But there was a laser show, then there's fireworks, but that they only had one area for beverages of any kind.
Yeah, it was
there
like
a ton of people.
They
there.
Were literally serving water, alcohol, wine, beer, all from this one stand. And I sat in line for about 20, 30 minutes, literally just to get water. Like,
really?
It was, yeah,
that
it was
ridiculous.
Totally
worth it.
God, yeah. No way.
No.
Yeah, I mean, there was kids and family, so we tried to get a whole bunch of bottles of water.
Kids.
And they had like a two drink serve limit. It's like, why would anybody want to come here and drink? But probably that's probably how they wanted it to be. You know what I mean?
Yep. All right. Well, we're all starting here for a new year. We're all ready to go. We got plenty to talk about. Anybody think that it was the greatest college football game that's ever been played? Or did you think it was a pretty damn good Rose Bowl between USC and Penn State? We can talk about that. And oh, by the way, the Texans have already named a starting quarterback, and there's plenty of rumors and things circulating based on that story. That's what we're going to get to next. Before we get to all that, I want to tell you about Gallery Furniture. It's a new year, and why not start it off by sleeping a new way? Why don't you get yourself a Macapedic mattress from Gallery Furniture? They start at $19.99, and with every purchase of a Macapedic mattress, you get an $800 Gallery Furniture gift card free. All of Mac stuff is solid American made, and it is fantastic product. And they are, it's great furniture, and it's best service after the sale in Houston, Texas. It's locally owned and operated by our man Mattress Mac. You can get 2-for-1 recliners, Macapedic sleep sets. You buy today, you get it tonight. You know exactly how Mac does it. And he offers the largest selection of living room furniture made in America, as well as dining room furniture. Solid wood dining room tables and chairs, all from Gallery Furniture. You buy it today, you get it tonight. Deck your home theater out just in time for the rest of the bowl games or for the big game and the NFL playoffs coming up, leading up to the Super Bowl here in Houston, Texas. All you got to do is head to Gallery Furniture. They have the largest selection of made in America leather seating and special order upholstered furniture for your home theaters. Set up your man cave. Get the custom made furniture and leather furniture that makes that man cave extra luscious and comfortable when you want to fall asleep there and hide from the family after the game's over. And you probably feel a little better than you should. Hey, it's all part of Gallery Furniture because, like I said, my man Mattress Mac makes sure in all three of his locations, Grand Parkway on Highway 99, or Westheimer and Post Oak in the Galleria, as well as the mainstay location, I-45 North Exit, Tidwell Parker, no back quarter slips. Buy today, get it tonight. Gallery really will save you money.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel, Barry, and Nick till 4 o'clock, and now that we've cut through the fluff and funny business of New Year's and what we did and how we're doing, let's get right down to the nitty-gritty. Bill O'Brien has named Brock Osweiler as his starting quarterback for your Houston Texans as they welcome in the Oakland Raiders this weekend. You know what? They're saying now that Savage hasn't cleared the protocol for concussions yet. I've got a little bit more to this that I've heard from several sources, but before we get to all that, I'll get your guys' initial thoughts on the game, what happened, and what you think about the starter for the playoff game, Barry.
So let's start with the game.
Yep.
Not splendid. Mm-mm. Not a fun game to watch as usual. I don't think there's much Texans football that is fun to watch. Would that be safe to say?
Very safe.
They're not an exciting brand of football. Even, you know, I mean, as good as the defense is, it's still not a defense you want to watch, you know, play by play because it's that. I mean, with J.J. Watt out there, it was like, oh, you never know, he could go. But it's just one of those ho-hum kind of things. Savage getting hurt, it was like, you know, I've heard people driving in. I was listening to a couple of different stations, and I heard people getting upset about the fact that Savage got hurt because they used him on a quarterback sneak to get a first down. And they were basically, hindsight 2020, questioning that play call when the fact of the matter is that's the right call in that situation. So don't blame you. Trust me, I'm not a fan of Bill O'Brien's play calling. But in that scenario, dude, Tom Brady runs quarterback sneaks. If Tom Brady can run quarterback sneaks, Tom Savage can certainly sneak his ass across that line for a
first
down.
Plus, if you look at the hits, he never took a shot to the head. It was more like kind of the shoulders by two linebackers coming from different directions. But to me, I totally agree it was the right call. But secondly, and more importantly, I kept looking for where the blow to the dome piece was. And I think that the only thing that really got the whole concussion thing rolling was the ref on the opposite side of the field saw him not get up right away and kind of saw him look in his mind to be a little bit glazed. So he came running onto the field, and then all of a sudden the protocol began. So to me, I was sitting there going, show me a replay that shows where he took a shot to the head.
Now, see, I saw it a little bit different. To me, from the replay that I saw, which was straight on when he was coming towards the camera across the first down line, it looked to me like the player on his left or on his right, camera left, hit him in the head with his shoulder. And so that's what I thought was the culprit. But it wasn't obvious. Like, it wasn't just, you know, openly obvious how he got hit. So nonetheless, when he went out, I thought, okay, if ever there was a time to redeem yourself and to win over the hearts of Texans fans, mm-hmm. it's now Brock Osweiler.
Well, it's what I said when we were talking about who should start the Tennessee game and or the Cincinnati game. And I said it's much easier to start Savage and then Brock could come in and feel like he's going to try and help the team out and be the hero, as opposed to you start Brock and he's looking over his shoulder for every little mistake going, if I screw up, I'm gone.
Yeah. Yeah. The good news is he threw for 253 yards. Mm-hmm. One of his better outputs on the year, and he didn't even start the game. He had an 80 rating, a 61 quarterback rating, but he didn't throw an interception. And so I know everyone is down on him, but keep in mind, this is a dude who throws an interception a game, essentially. Mm-hmm. And he managed to get through it without turning the ball over in that regard, without throwing an interception. Savage had the fumble that he lost. You know, he didn't have an interception. But so you had that turnover, but you had a passing touchdown. Now, you still got some red zone woes. You still had a few hiccups in there. They're not looking great. They did score two touchdowns. Everyone got a free monster taco. I don't know if you guys took advantage of that or not. Dreams really do come true. But again, I think I'm not worried about the loss. I'm not worried about the 24 points. You had nobody on defense that should have been on defense. Nelson looked like Charles James without the socks. I mean, that dude was getting burnt. And that's not the guy that's going to be playing for you come playoff time when you're facing the Raiders. So I don't worry about the defense. I just worry about the fact that Brock Osweiler is still not a good quarterback.
You just got to hope Bouye's okay, too, because that injury could be very costly, especially since you know how depleted the secondary's been, and you're talking about guys that came into the lineup to try and spell guys, and they just got exposed. Bouye's got to play and play well to make sure that that defense stays intact and doing the right thing to try and keep the Texans in games.
I would agree with that. Yeah, you're going to be in – well, okay. So let's just – you definitely need Bouye in there.
Mm-hmm.
However, does Matt McGloin – or Connor Cook scare you if
right
Bouye
now
is not
looking
in there?
Like Connor Cook and is it Garrett? Their four string, but they've got.
I don't know.
But it's like. But here's the question: who would you rather have, Cook and others in with the Raiders, or Osweiler and Savage with the Texans?
Like, what do you mean as a defense?
No. Who? What? If you're the team going into that game, which set of quarterbacks would you rather have?
To be honest with you, of all the quarterbacks that could play. Would you guys think I was an idiot if I said maybe Brandon Whedon was the best out of that group? Because no one is mentioning the fact that you've got Savage, you know what you're going to get out of that. Not much. He's not a good quarterback. That's why he never could win the job. Yeah, he couldn't win the job from Brock. I mean, he's not.
Here's my thing. The sample size was so small that on Brock, and yet they paid him all that money, that I would like to see more of Savage before I pass the ultimate judgment on him, though I hear what you're saying, that he hasn't exactly lit the world on fire.
And see, I think that's scary for Tom Savage. So, like, he comes in and he basically has, what, a game and a half or two games that he played. And if he didn't really outperform Brock Osweiler completely, then he's basically going to lose an opportunity.
He had 13 yards in the first half of the game against the Jags.
I know.
And then he came back with 150 or 160, and that's great. But if you look at the stats line, here's what's crazy. You look at the stats line, he had 25 yards. Brock Osweiler had 253. However, they ended up with 243 yards. So combined, they still had negative passing yards.
Yeah.
That's a problem. Yeah. Neither one of these guys are good quarterbacks. And this is not this seems like such a hot take to say that. But I'm answering the question. Going into this, this is just a horrible offensive game to watch.
Yeah.
I don't want to see.
Well, the fact that we all had to think about it and think about who we'd rather have means that all the selections are awful.
If we're not talking Derek Carr, that none of these other names matter. I mean, McGloin, Cook, Savage, Osweiler, Whedon, who cares? Like, honest to God, I wish it's just like,
it basically comes down
just
to
run Wildcat the whole game, both sides.
Which team can better cover up for who they have playing at quarterback? Both defensively and with the weapons around them on offense. So it's going to be very interesting to see. But like I said when I teased this on the way in, Brock's already been named the starter.
Yeah.
And now there's a lot of controversy and some things that you guys need to think about with a Jay Glazer story that came out and then the conspiracy theory that goes with it in terms of the question we've been asking all year long about who made the decision to bring in Brock and whose guy is Brock.
Yeah.
We may be able to get some light on that subject when we come back. ESPN 97.5.
This is ESPN 97.5.
One, two, three.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel, Barry, and Nick till 4, and shame on me. Way to bury the lead, Joel.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, this is going to go over like a fart in church at the house. Happy birthday to my wife. I have been scrambling around all day, and yet I neglected, even on the top of my notepad, as you can verify. First thing, happy birthday, Lisa, on my list of things to do for the show today, and then I go and blow it. That's the story of my life. Happy birthday to my lovely wife, Lisa.
Happy birthday, Lisa.
Yep. Hopefully she has a great day. Unfortunately, the baby's still sick, so she has to take the baby in as part of that day. But
big plans for the evening?
Got a few things up the sleeve.
Yeah? Surprises? Or does she know what's coming?
She doesn't have any idea, but we've got some things.
You get her some good presents?
Yeah, she's very tough. She doesn't really... first of all, she admittedly, every day is her birthday because during the year she's always shopping online because she has to get clothes and stuff for work. So she's not big on real, like gifty gifts, big like jewelry and stuff like that. But yeah, we're going to figure it out for her.
You going to get her a puppy?
That's already been taken care of. Yeah. So the house full of dogs keeps getting bigger. Lisa is a huge, we're both big animal people, and she dedicates a lot of time to making sure animals get adopted and saved. And she does this throughout the year.
Now hold on. I have a bone to pick.
Why? Because they're not just cats?
Do you have cats?
I don't. No.
Okay, does she?
No.
Okay, so it's all dogs is
not
what
true.
We're talking about.
At her house, her mom and dad have cats.
Oh, no. In your house.
I've been allergic to cats, by the way. I've been allergic to cats my whole life.
The ones she's saving and rescuing, dogs or cats?
Well, she does basically dogs, yeah. But she also does cats. She does a weekly Facebook post.
You guys are
pettist,
can I finish? What it is.
She does a weekly Facebook post.
Okay.
As well as the station's pet of the week.
Right.
And they are dogs and cats, horses, rabbits, all kinds of things. But she does all animals.
Okay.
But in terms of for our household, simply because I've been allergic to cats since I've been little.
I don't buy that.
Well, you should see the allergic reactions. They're fun.
I'm bringing a cat to the studio tomorrow.
First of all, that doesn't surprise any of the listeners that you have many to choose from. Sure.
I am, yes. Yeah. I'm going to bring one, and we're going to sit them next to you and see how you do. And if you do okay, then we know you just don't like cats.
Not true. But your conspiracy theory will work out well.
Damn it. I really thought I had something here, Nick. I guess not.
The thing is that she loves these animals so much that if a dog, last week a dog needed surgery. It was a puppy dog that they found in Rosenberg by itself, and it had been attacked by a bigger dog and literally had been head wounds to the mouth and to the top of the head, and she just immediately just took it. The shelter didn't have money for a vet or medical. She just took it, went to our vet, had the dog taken care of. The doctor did all kinds of medical procedures. The dog's going to be fine. And then the dog found its way to our house, where I'm pretty sure, and her mother and I basically have a bet, that dog's not leaving. So essentially, the birthday present that was her gift to her is going to be that we're going to take on another dog. I'm pretty sure.
But how does she know that dog didn't start it? Would you help?
I will say this.
Three-month-old
dog, right? And it's only going to be 30 to 40 pounds when it gets full grown. But I will say this. We have two dogs, two large dogs and two small dogs. And the two large dogs, the Lab Retriever is 100 pounds. And the Husky mix is about 65. And this little thing came at both of them right from the get-go. If you want to challenge me, I'll take your ass out.
See? What she did is she went out and she rescued a thug. That's what she went out and rescued a thug dog that's going around starting mess around town and then happened upon someone that whooped his ass. And she's rescuing him.
It's a little sheep. So we might just may name her Lil' Kim. Instead of the number, the cute name Queen she B. had picked out, yeah. We just Lil might have Kim. To name her Lil' Kim. But Lil' Kim is a tough little girl, and she's cute, and I'm pretty sure she's not going anywhere. But yes, happy birthday to my wife, Lisa.
All right, well, happy birthday, Lisa.
And we got that out of the way. Yeah. And love you, honey. And we were talking about the Texans.
Yep. Oh, that was for her.
Right,
okay.
Yeah. Although, it, you know,
my bad.
I thought although when your me. Jeans are that tight and snugly, you know, there is a different, there is a change.
I saw you looking at my butt when I walked out earlier. Yeah. I know. Mm-hmm.
I like how El Jefe made reference to the white, the white jeans.
He asked if I washed the white jeans. Well, yeah, those were the first ones. Those get the dirtiest.
Oh,
of course
boy.
I wash the white jeans.
Those get the dirtiest. And then there's that. Let's get to this conspiracy theory.
Okay.
Now, O'Brien's already come out and said, and it depends on how you look at it, but the Texans have already said, no, they announced, look, Osweiler's going to start on the playoff game against Oakland. Okay. But now there's, again, the backstory is, well, Savage hasn't cleared concussion protocol yet. But there's this story that's out there, thanks to Jay Glazer, that started that if the Texans don't have a deep playoff run or they don't advance, that O'Brien and the Texans may mutually part ways. And
okay, so let me stop there because I have a question. Mm-hmm. So define deep playoff run, because they're not – does that mean just beating the Raiders? Because they're obviously not advancing past that. I mean, we can all agree upon that, right?
I would say you got to win. You got to win at least one, if not more. But I think it's also the way you do it.
Okay, so if you go out and you lose a nail biter to the Patriots, he's fine. But if you go out and you get steamrolled by the Patriots, they're saying that he's gone?
Well, they're saying
because to me, winning would be deep for them. Like just beating the Raiders would be deep into the playoffs for this team.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing to me too. The stories that are circling around this story are going back to what we were talking about in the Tennessee game, okay? There is a conspiracy theory out there, and there are people that seem to firmly believe that Bill O'Brien, and you go back to his press conference a while back when he said, I'm going to pick the best man for the job at quarterback regardless. It doesn't matter what they're making. Paychecks included. That doesn't matter, okay? So we've said all year long how we wanted to know, was it a combination of Rick Smith, Bill O'Brien, and Mr. McNair? Who was involved in picking Brock, and who's responsible? Well, it's starting to come to the surface now based on this story, or it could, that there is a legitimate chance that in that Tennessee game, Bill O'Brien wanted Tom Savage to play and play the entire game. We go back to whether the hit was enough for a concussion or not, but then when people say, well, he passed the protocol for the concussion, and then after halftime, he was ruled out. You do have to be retested if you suffer a concussion or have to go through protocol in the first half. You have to be tested again at the half. That's a fact. All right, but here's the thing. Brock Osweiler goes out in his press conference and said, look, I knew I was going in when Tom went out, but then I was told that Tom was going to start the second half, and then all of a sudden I was told I'm starting the second half, and then I played throughout, and I'm just there to do, and then he says all the right things. There leads you to believe that there's more to this conspiracy theory, which was everybody's intention on that coaching staff led by Bill O'Brien was Savage was going to come in and play the rest of the second half, the entire second half, because they still had to make an assessment on him, and they wanted to see him play, and that there was a message sent from above, shall we say, that they wanted to see their guy, Brock Osweiler, and he was going to be the guy playing, and whether it was concussion protocol or they just said it was concussion protocol, one way or another, something was done or said, and people in this surrounding this story have said they believe that Rick Smith and or Mr. McNair basically said, Brock's our guy, he's going to play, and that Bill O'Brien wanted to play Savage and was not happy with the decision, and because of that, there's been a line drawn in the sand that may be enough to send these two going separate directions at the end of the year.
So do you believe this conspiracy theory?
I think it makes sense. I think that if you're Bill O'Brien, it could make bring a lot of light to the subject in terms of he has been somewhat pro Savage. He wanted to get Savage when he put Savage in there. He wanted to give him the opportunity. He made that comment, like I said. He has a lot riding on this with his reputation because people have made him kind of a quarterback whisperer. They've said that he has been like an offensive guy, and this is making him look very bad, whether you say it's the play calling and you place all the blame on the quarterback. For whatever reason, the offense has looked like predictable crap. It's very conservative, and it all starts with the quarterback play. This, whether it be a scapegoat way for Bill to say, I'm washing my hands, that this wasn't me, but this has all the writing on the wall to be believable, to say, look, I didn't pick this guy, I don't want this guy, and he's obviously not the guy. And if I'm going to have my wagon hitched to him, then I might as well get a new wagon and go somewhere else.
All right. So I don't know that I buy into from this game in particular, the theory that, you know, that somehow they made up that Savage couldn't play. I think that when he got reevaluated, I think for face value of what it was, he wasn't allowed to go back in because of the concussion protocol, and whoever reevaluated him at halftime said, nah, you're not, you know, you need to sit this one out. I think that there's probably, I lean that way more than I would lean, you know, guys getting involved from the top, Rick Smith and Bob McNair. But I do think that, you know, I don't know that, I don't know who was responsible for bringing Brock Osweiler to the Houston Texans, but I get the sense and the feeling that Bill O'Brien isn't completely sold on Brock Osweiler as a quarterback, but I've heard both sides. I've heard people or sources or whatever you want to call it that are supposed to know that said, yeah, that was Bill O'Brien. He wanted someone a la Tom Brady, a big, tall guy with some skills, and then, you know, he could work with it because he's the quarterback whisperer. Then I've heard other people that say, no, Brock was forced onto him because McNair committed to making a change, and so they went out and did the only reasonable solution at the time, which was to sign Brock Osweiler. So I've heard both sides. I don't know who I believe. All I know is that if you're Bill O'Brien and you're supposed to be the quarterback whisperer and both of these guys are playing the way they're playing, I don't think it matters whether you picked the one guy or not, because you're obviously not getting results. Now, how much of that has to do with the fact is you can't make you can't sculpt things out of crap. And, you know, if even if you're a sculptor, it's going to look like crap.
You can try and make chicken salad out of chicken crap.
Yeah, I was going to use that, but I didn't want to. I would end up cussing.
I delicately tried to get it out
I didn't trust myself. But I don't know that I subscribe 100% to the theory from the game in general. I think my biggest thing is like, if you listen to the way O'Brien says things, like I saw this quote. I thought Brock did some really good things on Sunday with his teammates and almost brought us all the way back, O'Brien said. So I thought he did a nice job, and we have a lot of confidence in him that he's going to go out there and play well on Saturday. Half of that I believe and half of it I don't. You know what I mean? Like, I think he thought, yeah, he did a nice job because, listen, he didn't have a terrible statistical game, even though he didn't bring him back. 253 yards, one touchdown, no interceptions. Compared to what he normally does, he did some good things. He's right. You know, he had some good passes. He led a couple of drives. So it looked better. But this is the stuff that you would expect to see him doing in preseason, getting ready for a regular season, not the last game, getting ready for a playoff game. And that's where I think O'Brien's like, I don't know what to do at this point. You know, he's probably thinking, I'm screwed no matter what, whether it's Savage or it's Brock. They're going to have to rely on that defense. So conspiracy theory-wise, I don't know. I've never been a big conspiracy theory guy when it comes to stuff like that, but I could be wrong. I mean, you've been inside of organizations. I have not, so I don't know that stuff goes. I'm sure there's politics everywhere you go.
Oh, for sure.
But you know, how much of that is going on between Rick Smith and Bill O'Brien? I don't know. I know last year there was some butting of heads too,
because we've been saying it on this show for quite a while now. We want to know who made the decision, because we may never find out. But you obviously assume the general manager is always going to be involved. You would think, because of what they did to get O'Brien here and the conversations they had, and we go back to the old Parcells quote, if you're going to be responsible for making the dinner, you should at least have a say-so in picking the groceries. And then Mr. McNair has always proven to be a hands-on type owner when it comes to his locker room and his talent. So it would be interesting to find that out. We probably never will.
No. Well,
but
you
this
will.
May or may not, depending on how this shakes out, give you a little bit more clarity in terms of who was on Team Brock and who wasn't.
True, but I think you'll find out once one of these guys step away or is no longer in the NFL. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. At some point, someone will get to O'Brien when he's retired or no longer coaching or no longer needs a job and can burn a bridge and be like, hell no, I didn't want Brock Osweiler. You saw the way he played. I could see the way he played, and I didn't want him. But, you know, we don't know if that's true or not now. LFA had a pretty interesting tweet. I don't know if I subscribe to this, but he's like, notice Kubiak retired after the O'Brien news. He's just trying to be available if the Texans job opens up.
Yeah, we'll get to that, too. Gary Kubiak, with kind of a very sad state of affairs in Denver, had to step away from the Denver Broncos and coaching a year after he won the Super Bowl. You all know that he had some health issues when he was here. Evidently, after the health issues this year, came back when he was in Denver. He makes a very wise, yet I'm sure very difficult decision, and it was very emotional for him to step away from coaching. Where does that lead Wade Phillips? Because if you look at Wade's Twitter account and some of the things being said, Wade Phillips, who arguably is one of the best defensive coordinators maybe of all time, but definitely right now in the NFL and has a pretty top-tier defense that likes him a lot, he could be in limbo right now. based on the fact that Denver's looking for a new head coach. So are five other teams. We can talk about that as well. We can talk about a lot of things. We haven't even told you how to reach us, but you guys that are loyal listeners know how to do that. 713-780-ESPN if you want to text us or call the show. If you want to join in on Twitter, at Barry is funny, at No Hit Nick, at Pac-Man Joel with a K. We're here till 4, ESPN 97.5.
Listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Hey, Joel, Nick, Barry, till 4, as we continue to roll on with a new year, 2017, definitely the year of the show. We're going to keep bringing it to you, both sports and otherwise, but there's plenty to talk about on the sports front. We covered the Texas to some degree, and we can definitely cover more of that. We will get to the College Bowl playoffs, which were hardly playoffs. They were not kind of uneventful. But, oh, by the way, for those people that normally say that the NBA doesn't officially start till Christmas Day, well, whether you started at the start of the season or you started Christmas Day, you are being entertained by a Rockets team that is consistently maintaining a top three position in the Western Conference, is entertaining on a nightly basis, and a team that looked like it was going to be James Harden and a cast of others.
Injured, defenseless playing guys.
And others. Okay. Yes, yeah. Amongst others. Is really looking like a solid together unit that is much more than just James Harden. However, James Harden now looks like a two-horse race with Russell Westbrook for the MVP. And in a lot of people's current standings, he's the favorite. Now Westbrook taking second fiddle. But that should be a really fun battle to watch. But more importantly than anything else, this team is fun to watch. This team is winning games. And this team is doing things that I don't think anybody thought that they would, me being included, at the start of the year. I definitely thought they were going to be fighting for the lower half of the Western Conference playoff seeds. They look like right now, as I keep referencing that Sonics team from a few years ago, they may get so far in front of everybody else with the Clippers injuries and everybody else, all they can do is keep doing what they're doing, and they're just winning games. James Harden, his third consecutive triple-double, never been done in Rockets history before. And by the way, quietly, on New Year's Eve, that game he put up against the Knicks,
yep,
you can put that game up against the greatest of all time, and I'm not talking just about, you know, in recent history. I'm talking about next to Wilt Chamberlain in terms of the greatest statistical triple-double ever posted. When you're talking about 53, 17, and 16, you're talking about a stratosphere that, just like when Westbrook did what he did and had so many in a row and so many in a short period of time, hadn't been done in 24 years, you look at what he did Saturday night, you look at the body of work that he's been putting together, and then you look at three straight triple-doubles, he's doing some things basically unheard of in the NBA, and it's phenomenal to watch.
It is. It is a. It's a fun brand of basketball. D'Antoni's system makes you want to watch. The number of threes that these guys are shooting on a nightly basis is insane. You've got four Rockets in the top 10 and three pointers made. Eric Gordon leading the way. It is fun, and they are 3.5 back of the Warriors, which I don't think anyone would have thought would have been the case even at this point. Much less at any point in the season. They're a game behind the Spurs. They are one of the three best teams in the Western Conference, and I think of that, there is no doubt. Even with a healthy Clippers team, I think you could make the case for the Rockets being one of the three best teams in the West when the Clippers get back to 100%.
What impressed me about this win is that one of the knocks that we had, I think, on this show on the Rockets was, what would they do if their shot wasn't falling early in last night's game? Their shot just was not falling at all.
2 for 17 from three-point line.
Yeah, they dug themselves a hole, but you're right, because that's what I've been harping on them on two of the things that I've been harping on them the most are figure it out on what to do when your shot's not falling, and then finishing games. You're seeing both of those things get better before your eyes if you watch this team on a consistent basis, because you're right. Last night was one of those games where the shot wasn't falling, they were digging themselves a hole, and you're like, okay, this is either going to be here we go again, or this is one that just gets away from them because they can't grab the reins and reel in a game that's starting to get away from them, or they can say that they're starting to learn some things. I can't say enough about how meaningful that Dallas game was for a lot of reasons to show the togetherness and the unity of this team, but it looked like everybody said, look, we can't just sit back and let James be the guy that leads us every single night, and he's going to have off nights. We got to find a way to step up when he does. Boy, Eric Gordon, as I keep telling you guys, I know James Harden's the best player on this team, but you talk about a most valuable player on this Rockets team because it's easy to point at James. Eric Gordon has been simply phenomenal for this franchise. And that's the difference, I think, because Anderson's been so hot and cold. That is the difference why this team is playing better and better. The second unit, still up and down, but when he leads the way, and again, it's not who you start with, it's who you finish. One thing I noticed about last night, I think, Barry, you were watching it and catching up on it and making sure you went back on some things on tape on this. The one thing that I watched when I watched it the second time, the game last night, was who's finishing. Because what they're doing is they're making sure that the other four guys on the floor, one is just a guy strictly out there to defend and block shots and rebound, which is Montrezl Harrell, and give you energy. He's able to run it up and down the floor. But everybody else has to be able to make the three and has to be able to shoot the ball with some consistency. And when you're finding Gordon, Anderson, Ariza, or Gordon, Anderson, not last night, Beverly's been out, but when you look at Gordon, Anderson, and the way Trevor's been shooting the three ball around James and Montrez, that's a team that's not going to let you down from outside or get James frustrated when he distributes the ball if guys aren't making shots. Those guys are going to make shots for you.
Well, those four that you named are all the four that are in the top 10 of three-pointers made
yep.
in the NBA. And when you put you put all four of those guys on the floor, it doesn't really – I don't think it matters. You could put Nene, you could put Capella, you could put Montrezl Harrell down at the five spot. It's not going to matter because two of those guys for sure can get to the rack.
Right.
Right. You know Gordon and James Harden can go to the rack when they want to. And Ariza is he's the most efficient at the corner three in the NBA, and he has been for a couple of years now. So, and Ryan Anderson is probably the only low post game on the court. So when you have to back somebody down, which is sad to say, but you can go dump it down to Ryan Anderson in the post and let him, you know, back somebody in for a little bit if that's what you have to do. Not going to do that against the better quality power forwards in the league, but it can happen. And so, yeah, that lineup right there, that final five, is probably one of the most diverse that you have in the league. And the fact that they're knocking down threes at the insane rate that they are, it makes it tough to guard, man, especially when they can get to the rim and get a shot up that way.
And to your point, Joel, about Eric Gordon, what I love about that situation is that he totally embraces that. And he though he's coming off the bench, he says he doesn't feel like he's coming off the bench. He acknowledged that he's only playing 29 minutes a game, and starters usually get more than that, but he's completely okay with it.
He's completely okay with it. That's part of the reason why he's healthy. 29 minutes is a good number for him,
right?
That's
a great point.
Because when he was in New Orleans and everybody thought because of the money they spent and because he was always supposed to be the guy, they continually forced him out there for long stretches of minutes, which took its toll on him, and he got worn down. He was never the same. 29 minutes is a good number. He is this is the millennial version of Sam Cassell, circa Rockets championship years. He doesn't start, but he finishes. And what he does is he gives you the option in the fourth quarter you have to have, because come playoff time, you're going to see teams, when it's down to a one-possession game, going to try and take the ball out of James's hands, going to try and double him up. Well, if they do that, then you have to have guys that not only can take control on a drive situation, but can make shots for you. Eric Gordon with over 20 points in the fourth quarter the other night, that's what you need to see from a guy like that. If he continues to do that, I don't care how streaky Anderson is, because you have two legitimate weapons there, it makes the rest of the floor so much better, so much more spaced, with so much more opportunities to create and score, that it takes the load off of James Harden, if that's possible, just by being double-teamed, because there's guys that can do it for him. That's what's going to be interesting to see. How long they can keep this up. They've already survived the Capella injury. Hopefully they won't have any more injuries to deal with. But they have to be the story in the NBA to this point because of what they've been able to achieve and because of how prognosticators didn't give them the credit that they now are showing that they deserved at the start of the year.
Well, everyone slept on their defense. I think that's what you thought with Anderson and Gordon was these guys can't play defense at all. This team is number two in point differential in the NBA.
Right.
They're the second highest scoring team in the NBA, but they're also second in point differential, tied with the Raptors at plus seven, at almost plus eight a game. The only one better than both of those teams is the Golden State Warriors. That says a lot about this team that no one thought. Like, I don't think anyone thought that their point differential would be that. I was expecting a point maybe one way or the other because of how bad I thought their defense would be. They're playing much better than I thought on
the defensive end. Yeah, and the key is during that 10-game span, they were one of the top teams, if not the top team in the NBA for 10 straight games, the way they played defense. Now, you expect when you lose Capella, you're gonna fall off a little bit. But for the most part, they've been able to pick up the pieces on team defense. It's not just one guy. It's how they pack the middle so that guys can't penetrate. It's how they prevent anybody going to the boards and really killing them on the glass. And then it's making sure that you catch them flat-footed and you run them into the ground so that they get tired. So far, D'Antoni's system seems to be the perfect fit for all involved. Let's see if they can keep it up. If you want to talk about the Rockets, let us know. If you want to hit us up on another topic, please hit up the show. We're here till 4 o'clock. It's Nick, it's Barry, it's Joel, and we are ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.